Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. Cause when I look to the sky, something tells me you're here with me. And you make everything all right.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found at www.winbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Dr. Piero Calvi-Parisetti, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. And how was your day today, Bob?
Not bad. And yours? Hectic, I know that.
Hectic, but fabulous.
Okay. And I did want to mention, as our listeners know, if you visit the website, we put up polls. They're not extensive surveys. They're one-question polls. This particular one is a one-question with three answers. But we like them. They're really revealing. We get a big response from them. So the present poll has a question that has to do with, is life predetermined and free will?
The actual question is, are our lives here in the physical predetermined?
Okay. Now, we give three questions, and when you get a chance,
three possible answers.
Not and hit one, and we'll tabulate them. And as we do, we keep them up for a month, and we usually get a large number of responses, and we publish the results on the website and in a newsletter. You were telling me earlier about an article you were reading. Now, we've had scientists on the show and researchers talking about the pineal gland and how they may be a possible link to communication, intuitive communication, and possibly, you know, in communication with those in other realms. So what was the gist of this that you were reading?
Well, this person who has this website talks about the pineal gland and its importance. First of all, she goes through the whole biological location of it and its function on regulating hormones and this and that and the other thing. But she says the most important thing, at least from her perspective, is that it is the center of connecting on a spiritual level. She claims that those people who have trouble meditating or are not open to receive communication from the other side, it's because their pineal gland has become calcified and or toxified, and that she gives ways on her website to decalcify your pineal gland so that it works better, or so that you'll have a better meditation, or so that you could talk to the dead. But she has some really interesting information on it, some that I recognize from noted scientists that we've interviewed on the radio show. She puts her own twist in here because her site is all about taking care of your body, mind, spirit, and
soul.
And soul, I guess. I'm kind of hesitant that it even goes that far because I just really just clicked on this page. But it is quite interesting because she claims that we were designed to live in the four-dimensional world or in a dimension beyond this physical world, and that because we have neglected using or not taking care of this gland, we lost our ability to see via the third eye, and therefore we have to use our regular eyes only to see, and those regular eyes only allow us to see in the physical world.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I've always suspected that there's some part of our brain that is useful, and possibly, as you say, even by design is there for that very purpose, going back to maybe the way we were originally and communicating intuitively. I remember being fascinated by reading about, DMT, which is a naturally occurring hallucinogenic type of has hallucinogenic properties. I guess it's secreted. Is it by the pineal gland? I'm not sure, but
that sounds familiar.
But it's not only in human beings, but it's in other species, and it's in plants, and then it's in all living things. And you have to ask yourself why, if this is part of a design, or even if it's not, why do we have this substance that will enable us to communicate or hallucinate, and in that fashion, it has to be for some purpose, even if you don't believe it's by design.
Well, then you have to look at it from the other perspective. You're looking at it from our present perspective and, wow, we have this gland and it has to be there for some reason, kind of like we have the argument of why are there mosquitoes? Well, obviously they have to be there for some reason in this food chain or in the survival chain or in just transporting whatever has to go from one place to another. But with this gland, what we really have to look at is before we were this organized culture, where everybody gets up in the morning and you go to work and then you come home and you eat dinner and you watch TV and you shut the TV, you brush your teeth, you go to sleep, and you do the whole thing over and over and over again. Well, before we were these crazy people that did this stuff all for the sake of having money and buying things, we were simple people who lived in caves and had to find ways of survival. So we got our information from someplace.
The internet?
No. Not yet.
Well, this is a mind-to-mind internet.
Exactly. The web, the entangled web, where they're able to glean information. And how do they do that? By using forms of meditation, i.e. the pineal gland, to get this information, to be able to see into the other dimension and to know, when do I plant my crops? When am I going to be warm again? How do I find a place to live? How do I survive the winter?
I'm going to decalcify my pineal gland, and then we'll see what happens.
She gives methods on how to do it, but she really blames fluoride in the water as the main reason for why they don't.
Good a theory as anything else. I'm anxious to get to our guests, so we're going to go to our break, and we come back. We're going to have a wonderful guest, Dr. Calbi Parisetti, who's a medical doctor. And we'll be talking about the afterlife and grief and bereavement and death. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Don't miss Forever Family Foundation's 7th Annual Conference Weekend, November 9th and 10th, this year in warm and sunny San Diego, California. In Search of the Afterlife, Experiencing, Communicating, Connecting to Another World, is designed for general audiences interested in learning about evidence of an afterlife. Attendees will be treated to cutting-edge presentations of evidence that we survive our physical deaths, as well as demonstrations of spirit communication by certified mediums. Add on the optional Friday night fundraiser dinner featuring medium Kim Russo, host of The Haunting of TV show, and stay an extra day for Media Monday. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Piero Parisetti. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Bob?
And as Fran mentioned, our guest tonight is Dr. Piero Calvi Parisetti. He wears many hats. He's a medical doctor, a university lecturer. He's a member of the Society for Psychical Research. He's a member of IANS, International Association for Near-Death Studies. He's also a trained psychotherapist and a grief counselor. And after some years in private practice and being immersed in the academic world, he started to passionately study and research phenomena that suggest life after death. In 2008, he wrote a wonderful book called 21 Days into the Afterlife, A Scientific and Literary Journey That May Change Your Life. He's now shifted again, becoming more involved in the death and bereavement and grief counseling, and he has developed actually a wonderful course. It's an online course that the bereaved can take to reduce their grief and lessen the fear of death. We'll be talking more about that, but at his website is drparisetti.com, and that's D-R, and then his name, P-A-R-I-S-E-T-T-I.com. Welcome, doctor. How are you?
Thanks very much, Bob. Well, it's 2 o'clock in the morning here, but yeah. I'm so excited. I'm so happy to be talking to you people that it doesn't matter. It's really great to be here, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. That's dedication, to be the show airs live, and it just shows it's a testament to your dedication. If you're willing to do this type of work to get the word out and stay up this hour in the morning. Now, for our listeners, you certainly they might be thinking Parisetti is an Italian name, but clearly your speech pattern is not necessarily an Italian accent per se. So what's your background?
You're right. We could go on. This is a fantastic conversation starter with all the people I meet who don't know me, because certainly enough, this mouthful of a name I've got, Calvi Parisetti, is an Italian name. But in fact, I'm a Glasgow boy. I'm an Italian from Glasgow. And, there's been a big immigration in Scotland, so you find a lot of Italian names there. In fact, I myself was born in Italy, but then I've got big connections with Scotland. Italy doesn't mean much anymore to me, and I consider myself fully Scottish these days.
And Is there a preference to single malt Scotch or a nice
most definitely wine? Yeah, no, exactly. I'm the Highland type. I don't like the islands. You know, okay. The Western Isles, the Western Hebrides, the whiskies there are peaty. I don't like that. I like it very clean, very smooth.
Yeah. Well, you're an expert in everything. Well, so let's move into this a little bit, because I'm curious, and I'm sure other people. So how does a physician get so involved in the interest in life after death? Was it as a result of a personal experience or just something that always... was at the back of your mind that you wanted to get into?
No. In fact, it was not at all. You know, I was raised in a mildly Catholic family, and never really, if I must be very honest, never completely interested in religion or spirituality. And then I studied medicine, and I took a scientific career. And basically, for most of my adult life, what I've read is, you know, popular books on physics, astronomy, that kind of stuff. So I have a scientific bent, if you want. And then one day, my wife told me a little story that happened to her when she was an adolescent back in Glasgow. And it was a spooky story and something that I would have, you know, immediately dismissed, saying, ah, you know, that's fantasy, that's nothing. But I could tell that after all these years, this still, you know, this made an impression on her, and she was still remembering this, and she was somehow perturbed. And so with that kind of stiff upper lip that one has, says, let me see if anything serious has been written on this stuff. And I stumbled upon a book by the late Professor David Fontana, 575 pages, and boy, that blew me away completely. Yeah, and those 500 pages were then followed by about 30,000 more, I reckon, to this stage. So really, my interest and my curiosity, I don't consider myself a scientist. I'm not a scientist, but I'm really keenly intellectually interested in science and in discovering new things. And I was discovering tons of new things to my complete amazement. And so after a few years, since if I have one gift in life is the gift of writing, I set out to write my book. Say, do we need another book on evidence for the afterlife? Probably not. But I had this idea of coming up with a dialogue between me and a skeptic. And, you know, the dialogue begins and saying, what are you saying? How are you completely out of your mind talking about an afterlife? And then I say, look, I'm not here to convince anybody. Let me present the evidence. Let me discuss the evidence with you, and you yourself will draw your conclusions. And that has guided my approach to, if you want, disseminating this evidence ever since. I'm not out to convince people. I'm irrelevant in this process. It's the evidence that speaks for itself. And my experience in sharing knowledge as a university lecturer helps me in sharing this knowledge.
Hmm. Well, I think you're absolutely right. You cannot convince people by preaching or proselytizing. You simply lay out the evidence and open people's minds. And when you open people's minds, strange things happen. When we talk about the people, I'm sure all over the world, certainly in this country, people have such a fear of death. You know, they do everything during their physical life to avoid it. They don't even like to talk about it. What do you think causes such fear? Is it the finality of it, the thought that, you know, we think of ourselves as our bodies, so our bodies are not going to be here, so we're forever extinguished? You know, is that what causes the fear?
You know, we're under, as Einstein famously said, you know, that reality is a persistent illusion. And we're under this very, very strong, very seductive illusion that we are our bodies, and particularly we are our minds. since, you know, we know that our bodies change and our bodies age, and if we think and reflect a little bit, then it becomes obvious that we are not our body. We are our mind, our consciousness, our feelings, our memories, our perceptions, our being aware. And an equally strong illusion is that ourselves resides in the physical brain. And this, you know, this is a perception we have without really reflecting or stopping and making the connections. And this is, as we know, unfortunately supported by some findings, by the wrong interpretation of some findings of neuroscience. So basically what people and what I myself used to do, you identify yourself with your brain and your being alive. Your mind is dependent on the brain. When the brain dies, there's no more you. And the image I always had about dying is a black curtain. You know, I had surgery when I was wee, and I remember exactly the sensation of passing out when you get anesthesia, and that was death for me. Mm. And I think that is death for many people. And you're very correct in saying that a lot of people spend a lot of energy hiding away from this ultimate fear through a number of, you know, behaviors and thought patterns. But that's a thought that we cannot really entertain.
That's true. And I know there's been watching one of the videos in your online course. I mean, you gave the example of if you would ask most people, you know, who are you? You know, they would point to their body, like specific, most people point to their chest or their heart and say, well, you know, this
isn't it? Exactly.
Yeah. It's hard to conceive. We think of ourselves as our physical bodies, and it's so strange that that's what we have evolved into. I suspect that originally, way back in time, we thought quite differently. do you think that... So these are the stumbling blocks. I mean, you talk about stumbling blocks when in working with the bereaved. By stumbling blocks, you mean you first have to get people to stop thinking in physical terms and to recognize that our consciousness can act independently of our brains. Is that a stumbling block?
Most definitely, and here again, I mean, it's amazing the way how our societies and culture works. And I mean, you know, everybody else has a story that would deny that equation that mind equals brain. A lot of people have so-called paranormal experiences, but then, as we know, materialist science, the prevailing dogma in science, which is materialism, says otherwise. Oh, these are all fantasies. Forget it. And we ourselves, we're under such this big spell that we do not make the connection. And to cut a long story short, we have masses of evidence from parapsychology research that is incompatible with this reduction of mind to the physical brain. You cannot have telepathy, psychokinesis, precognition, mind over matter phenomena, which have repeatedly been demonstrated with the same scientific methods in the same universities that do any other field of science. And these things have been confirmed beyond any reasonable doubt. You cannot look at that evidence and still maintain the paradigm that mind equals brain. And so what I do at the beginning of my course, as you correctly say, I try to chip away, to eat away at that illusion by saying, listen, we have millions, literally millions of individual scientific trials which fly straight in the face of this paradigm. This is not how things work. Mind cannot be reduced to brain, and that's proven in the laboratory.
Absolutely. You know, as you mentioned, there are an overwhelming number of people that have personal experiences. And, you know, we're not just talking about having a near-death experience or a deathbed vision, but other, you know, more subtle signs, after-death communications and so forth. And then there are people that that simply don't. So I guess my question is, can one come to believe in an afterlife without having a personal experience?
Let me ask you a question in a different way. Do you have a direct experience of the curvature of the time-space continuum as predicted by the general relativity of Einstein? No, you don't.
No.
No, I don't. These are so far out concepts that we do not have a direct experience. And still, this is the way the world works. You know, we send rockets to the moon and to the outer planets based on this very apparently, you know, according to our common sense and daily experience, these are completely far out there things and, you know, unbelievable and difficult to understand. And still, that is the way the world works. So me, I never had an experience myself, unfortunately. But I read, I studied, and I understood. And you might have heard me saying in my course that I do not believe in these things, in, you know, in the existence of psychic powers on the one hand and of the afterlife on the other hand, because these are two separate things. I don't need to believe. I simply know. It's like I do not believe in Einstein's theory of relativity. I studied it. I've seen the evidence. I've seen that it's work. I do not need to experience it myself. Am I making myself clear?
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's really what it comes down to. It's in working with the bereaved and working with people that are grieving, is getting them into a frame of mind where they're willing to change the way they think. I wholeheartedly agree with what you say. A lot of what we do in the foundation is educating people about the evidence. A lot of people that look at the evidence have not had personal experience. They may know loved ones or other people that have had them, but it's the information itself that they take comfort in, and that's what you're doing, and you continue to do, because I know that in the course, which has many modules to it, they're each 10 to 15 minutes in length. You will discuss the various phenomena, explain what they are, near-death experiences, deathbed visions, mediumship, reincarnation, various forms of electronic voice phenomena, et cetera. So I guess it's a slow process, right? You're absorbing and absorbing and absorbing, and then all of a sudden you wake up and say, you know what? There's something to it. I have to learn more. I guess that's the whole point, right?
There you go, and absolutely, I'm really glad, and I'm humbled by the thoroughness of your analysis of the resource I've put out, and that's exactly it. And I'm coming to this from two different angles. 15, 16 years ago, I had a bout of serious of clinical depression myself, circumstances in life and a combination of factors, and I went through a very difficult patch. Was really extraordinarily effective in pulling me out of that situation was cognitive behavior therapy, which is, recognized now has been recognized for 30 years as the treatment of choice, vastly superior to traditional psychotherapeutic approaches and even to our beloved Prozac and other things. And the key concept behind cognitive behavior therapy is changing thought patterns. When we suffer from depression, we think negatively. And the trick of cognitive therapy is not boosting ourselves, forcing ourselves to think positively, because that's fake, that's phony, that's not real. We simply correct the excess negativity in our thought patterns and we heal from severe depression. It's marvelous. So that is what I'm trying to do with my approach to grief counseling, correcting the thought patterns. You probably heard me saying in the course that I do not believe for a moment that a situation of bereavement or the fright and the desperation of a terminal patient can be transformed into a day at the beach. Now, these remain intensely painful human experiences, but there's a layer of this suffering which is not necessary, which is not founded, is no reason of being in reality. That terminal hopelessness that comes from thinking that one will simply disappear, cease to exist, and the same hopeless anguish of thinking that the loved ones we've lost have gone and they exist no more. They were here, they were part of our lives, they were physically present, they were emotionally present, and now all that has gone away. And that is, those thoughts generate a lot of suffering, compounding the general suffering of the bereaved and of the dying. And this is unnecessary, because that's not true. People do not go away. And as you very correctly say, it's not me saying, I insist on this. I'm no spiritual teacher. I'm not revealing anything. I am just presenting information, and it is very process on the part of the people of going through this information, learning, thinking, supporting the rational faculties we have that can take away that pain. This has been proven time and again by clinical practice, by scientific studies. Sorry if I keep going a bit long on that, but this was my main motivation to get into, because, I mean, after all, I could have stayed with my studies, my scholarly attitude, reading my books and reading my reports and perhaps writing another book or something. But I really felt the desire of being of help. And unfortunately, research tells us that traditional psychotherapy approaches for grief and bereavement do not work. There is this quote, grim consensus, end quote, in the grief and bereavement counseling community, that traditional approaches are useless at best and can even be harmful to the bereaved, and that's terrible. On the contrary, we have masses of evidence that non-traditional approaches are very effective, and interestingly, these non-traditional approaches are all based and revolved around the evidence for an afterlife. My approach is the approach of reason, the approach of learning and understanding. But other approaches, psychological techniques like the Psychomantium of Dr. Moody, with whom I have had the luck of training last year, is very good. The induced after-death communication of Larry Botkin is very good. And having a seance, a good seance with a real good medium, actually takes away the pain of bereavement by 80, 90, 100%. The Windbridge Institute, sponsoring this very show, is doing some pioneering research in that respect, and the results are there to be seen. The research proves that when people have an understanding or a direct experience of this afterlife, of the continuation of consciousness, people feel a lot better.
Well, I couldn't put it in better words than you just said. You really get it, and we really appreciate it. You know, I can tell you, you know, from personal experience, and that really 10 years ago was how the foundation, our foundation, got formed. You know, in going, trying some traditional therapy or going to support groups, we found that you know, mental health professionals were very reluctant to talk about anything to do with an afterlife, and support groups themselves would, every time Fran or I would bring up the notion of survival or an afterlife, we were politely shut down and told to, you know, that's not our focus. And it was always so odd, we felt, because perhaps, you know, the most effective form of grief therapy that there is getting one to believe in an afterlife. Because after all, let's face it, the only thing that's going to give you any hope is the hope that you're going to see your loved one in some form or fashion again. So it never made sense to me, you know, even for a trained therapist, even if their personal belief was very materialistic in thinking and they weren't open to it, they should at the very least recognize the benefits to their patients. So I'm sure that troubled you when you were practicing as a physician. I'm sure that many of your colleagues, would not even entertain some of the things that they were told by their patients.
This is so extraordinary, Bob. Again, you yourself are really putting the finger on it. We live in this schizophrenic environment and society and culture whereby 63% of American adults have had in their life an experience of a contact with a deceased loved one. And of the Americans who do not believe in the afterlife, 30% still have such experiences. And what we're told is that we're all idiots, we're all visionaries, we're all hallucinating, 63% of the population. Please show some respect to begin with. Do not deny what is obviously year after year, research confirms, is a universal experience, a universal human experience that everybody has. Unfortunately, not me, but never mind. And I find this extraordinary in itself.
Yeah.
Plus, materialists hide behind their, you know, this ivory tower of science, but then themselves show this religious attitude, it's the attitude of the faithful. They believe in materialism and they will reject anything that goes against, even if this anything is the very science they pretend they're defending. And this is amazing, you know. The problem, I find it very interesting what you say, that if something works, that should be used. And I'm with you 100% on that. Even if something is based on a false premises or in a false premise, or it's, you know, it's invented, it's phony, it's shallow, still, if it clinically works, if it delivers results, I think it should be used. But
yeah,
that's not our case here. That's not our case. I am not convincing people that I'm an alien from an outer planet. I'm showing people scientific and empirical evidence. And the only conclusion an unbiased observer, an unbiased reader, an unbiased person can draw after considering this evidence is that we survive physical death. Not a matter of faith, not a philosophy, not an approach. Use your rational faculties. Be a skeptic. Question the evidence. As I say, as you said correctly, is the very process of engaging in this rational discussion with oneself and say, look, I was taught differently. You know, I read on science, on you know, Scientific American or whatever, that all these things are do not exist. But here, I mean, look at this study and look at this experience and what could be the alternative explanations. And the alternative explanations are far less credible than the very little credible, hypothesis that we survive physical death. And so at the end, one surrenders, but not because I say it, not because anybody else says that, because one engages with the evidence, studies, understands, and reflects.
Absolutely. We are talking with Dr. Piero Calvi Parisetti, and his website is DR for Dr. Parisetti, PARISETTI.com. We've been talking about his book, 21 Days into the Afterlife, and mostly about his online course that can be used by the bereaved and the dying. So we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk much more with Dr. Parisetti, so stay with us.
Don't miss Forever Family Foundation's 7th Annual Conference Weekend, November 9th and 10th, this year in warm and sunny San Diego, California. In Search of the Afterlife, Experiencing, Communicating, Connecting to Another World, is designed for general audiences interested in learning about evidence of an afterlife. Attendees will be treated to cutting-edge presentations of evidence that we survive our physical deaths, as well as demonstrations of spirit communication by certified mediums. Add on the optional Friday night fundraiser dinner featuring medium Kim Russo, host of The Haunting of TV show, and stay an extra day for Medium Monday. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Piero Parisetti. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. If you're a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. And now before we get back to our show, it's time for some foundation messages for our listeners. There are three ways to show us you like Signs of Life Radio. First, go to the Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us. Two, use the donate button on any one of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you don't like so much about the show. And three, remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you'll need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 1,300 online stores like Cheap Tickets, Drugstore.com, Hanes, J. Crew, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. The original annual Afterlife Conference, our 7th, will be held this year in beautiful and warm San Diego, California at the DoubleTree by Hilton Golf Resort, November 9th and 10th. Mark the dates as this will be the best one ever. They usually are. They get better and better every year. Make your plans now to be there for Friday Night Banquet, featuring Kim Russo, star of the hit TV series The Haunting of. She'll be bringing through communication from the other side for all those in attendance following a delicious plated dinner. Then the conference begins early Saturday morning through Sunday evening, including featured presentations by Tom and Lisa Butler, Dr. Jeffrey Tarrant, research medium Janet Mayer, Dr. Stephen E. Browdy, and Lloyd Auerbach, with spirit communication demonstrations from certified mediums Laura Lynn Jackson and Angelina Diana. And as a special add-on this year, we bring you Medium Monday. So check the website for registration information and make your reservations now, as special discounted hotel room rates end on October 23rd. Our Holidays Past raffle is in full swing, and the drawing is just around the corner on December 23rd. Win a one-hour phone reading with one of our certified mediums. In this raffle, we have Dave Campbell, Eliza Ray, Nancy Marlowe, Tracy Lee Nash, and Catherine Nadal. It's $5 a chance. And our annual December Holidays Past events are scheduled for Natick, Massachusetts, with medium Siri Bernstein on December 7th, Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, with medium Janet Nohavik on December 14th, and on December 21st, it's Angelina Diana in South Windsor, Connecticut, and Amy Utzman in Fort Myers, Florida. Reservations and information pages are now up on the Forever Family Foundation website, and email notifications will arrive in your inbox shortly. Okay, Bob, we're back to you.
Well, and I thank Dr. Parisetti for staying with us on that, where it's almost 3 in the morning there, and I just may keep you so interesting, I just may keep you up through the night.
As they say, you know, it's my great pleasure.
You know, one area that you discuss, both in the book and in the online course, is deathbed visions. Many of our listeners are familiar with near-death experiences. We've had many, many talks about the subject. Not so many may be familiar with deathbed visions. So tell us a little bit about them and your thoughts about how evidential they are.
Right. people are not familiar with this phenomenon unless they are a professional nurse or a resuscitation doctor, or anybody who's around people when they die, because then when you do, this becomes, you know, common knowledge, common direct experience. Research tells us that about 10% of people are conscious at the moment of their death, and of this 10%, two-thirds, that's 66%, report what we call deathbed visions. And deathbed visions are visions of what appears to be the afterlife, and particularly of dead relatives who, the people say, have come to take the people over. And again, this has been discounted and discredited and explained away as fantasies and wishful thinking and all that. Although, when then you look at the reports, this hypothesis really looks untenable. And especially when you talk to the professionals who witness this day in and day out for a lifetime, and they say, of course, you know, you have this old man who's about to die, hasn't been saying a word for weeks, is very weak, is very, you know, is gone, is basically gone. And then a few hours before he dies, he sort of wakes up with a radiant smile on his face, and he looks intently at one part, at one corner of the room, and then he engages in a conversation with people nobody else can see. And he has complex conversation and say, oh, here's my mom, and she's come to help me to make the transition, to go over. And it's obviously a very moving, very intense human experience for these people. And then within a few hours, they go. That's basically how a deathbed vision goes. Then there are a few interesting features that say that, you know, make the explaining away a bit more difficult. What's been shown is that these things happen to people who are going to die. they do not happen to people who think they are going to die. And that's that you know, does away with the explanation of wishful thinking and of fantasies. If a person, there are persons who are convinced that they are about to die, and they don't, because their clinical conditions don't have them die, and they do not have these experiences. Other people are convinced of making a recovery, and still, a few hours before, excuse me, we're looking at typically 12 to 24 hours before their actual death, they still have this experience. And there are a number of other research findings that make the explanation of fantasy or hallucinations not really tenable. But the nail in the coffin, if you allow this, you know, no pun intended here, the right. Nail in the coffin of the explaining away is the fact that some people report seeing dead relatives whom they did not know they were dead at the moment they had this vision. And there are there's quite a number of anecdotes. And how do you explain that? You really have a lot of explaining to do to say that this is just a fantasy of or a hallucination.
Yeah, and that's there's a rich history of these crisis apparitions, you know, where people recognize deceased people that they did in the same situation. They didn't know that the people would die until afterwards. And people have crisis apparitions when they're not necessarily, you know, injured or near death. They just could be in a waking or non-waking state. So it's just more evidence of survival and communication. So do you think that it's possible that everyone has a deathbed vision, that everyone has help in crossing to the other side? It's just that, as you mentioned, a lot of people are physically or emotionally incapacitated at the time, so they can't communicate it. But
it's a very intriguing hypothesis. I never thought in those terms, but it is well possible. And here, you know, Bob, that's always the difficulty I have. And also I have, you know, many people asking me certain questions, and questions which I honestly cannot answer. Not being, as I said, not coming from the angle of a spiritual teacher with the revealed truth, most of the questions people ask me, I have to answer, I don't know, because that's my intellectual honesty. I do not know. How is it that two-thirds of the people have an experience of after-death communication and one-third doesn't? I don't know. How is it that only two-thirds of the people who are going to die have a deathbed vision and the other third doesn't? How comes that only a variable percentage, you know, depending on the studies, you go from about 10% to over 40% of people in the conditions to have a near-death experience have one, and the rest of the population don't. We don't have an explanation for these things. But still, that does not invalidate the evidence. The evidence tells us that these things happen, and we should look for an explanation. I cannot provide one. I don't feel comfortable. I might have ideas and speculations, but this I'm happy to discuss this as an intellectual exercise, as a nice conversation. But I would not present this either as a theory or as evidence.
No, I mean, you're approaching this from a scientific perspective, and a lot of these questions are philosophical or spiritual conjecture, you know, which is not your main focus, you know, so I certainly understand that. You know, I wanted to get your opinion on something. We, one of the advantages of having such a large, you know, membership, across the globe, really, is we get to do these little surveys and our own little mini experiments. We did a survey recently where we had to do with personal experiences, and we asked a question on there that said, if you were going to have communication with a deceased loved one, would you prefer that the communication be direct to you, a direct personal communication, or information communicated through a medium? And quite frankly, when I suggested that question, I thought that the overwhelming majority, I would say 95%, in my mind would say I'd rather have the direct communication. But yet when the results came in, 35 to 40% of the people said that they would rather have the after-death communication through a medium, which totally shocked me until I started to sit back and evaluate why that might be. So do you think that fear, which we discussed earlier, has something to do with that?
Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing? Really surprising findings. But then... Let me share a very personal detail here. You know, my marital life is made somewhat difficult by the fact that my wife wakes up with nightmares, and so I risk a heart attack with maybe a night a week because she howls and she goes oh like that. And wow. I mean, if anybody should have a serene, a detached attitude to these things, it's her, because she's been following my work, she's been having a few experiences of her own. And so she's in the know. Nevertheless, there's a part of the unconscious, call it whatever you want, which associates the idea of spirit, ghosts, and all that with something which is to be feared. So she dreams of that at night and wakes me up. And your sample of the population says that it is safer to approach this through a medium. And this is an explanation that I'm coming at. It's not an explanation, it's my reaction to this very interesting finding that I didn't know about. And well, I think there is an element of, you know, fear, because this has been so much associated in the popular culture with all these poltergeist movies and you know... possession and evil spirits and all that, that these things linger. And
yeah,
also,
but you know what, Dr. Parasita, what I also found out was in talking with some of the responders is that it wasn't only the fear. It's people didn't trust the they said they wouldn't trust the information if it came to them directly, but since mediums do this professionally, that they could rely on the evidence more if it came from somebody else. So that was pretty interesting too.
as well, but don't forget, don't discount the fact that human contact and a relationship with another human is therapeutic in itself. You know, people went and here. I mean, God forbid that I get into some nasty argument with our psychoanalyst colleagues, but I mean, people have been going to psychoanalysts for decades where we do not have any evidence that psychoanalysis works for people, but still people go because they like the contact, they like to be talked to, they like to be taken into, you know, a relationship with another human. But this happens with spiritual leaders as well, and probably, yeah, as you say, it's safer, it's better to have these experiences through and with another human being.
Yeah, and I know we're near the end of our talk, but we're going to just, you know, there's so many things to talk with you about, and you're going to have to join us again, you know, at some point. But another question that bothers me is, we talked a little bit about deathbed visions and all of these professionals that deal with it on a regular basis. Don't you find it somewhat disturbing that a lot of your colleagues in these positions don't share their experiences? They keep it to themselves.
I don't find it disturbing. I find it maddening. Completely mad. That's the schizophrenia I was talking about. Yeah. I have been interacting recently with a very, very interesting guy, Dr. Ian Rubinstein. I had read his book a few months ago.
Yeah, we had him on the show.
Isn't he a fascinating guy? I mean,
yeah, he is.
marvelous. And I mean, the reception he is having with BMA, with the British Medical Association, is terrible. And we've been corresponding lately, and he was telling me, you know, I just decided to shut up because the opposition is so strong that, you know, I'm missing the word now, but yeah, let's call it opposition. The closure is such on the part of the medical profession that even me, I mean, he is a bloody medium, for God's sake. He uses his mediumistic capabilities in his clinical practice, and people feel a lot better. But that's not allowed. Not even that is allowed. So it's really bizarre. Still, I don't think we should feel too isolated and too, you know, negative and pessimistic. I believe that there is slowly but surely a critical mass of healthcare professionals, of mental health professionals, of professional scientists, who are coming on board. And I don't want to talk about a revolution or a new dawning, but I think that, you know, we are eating away, we are chipping away slowly but surely from this huge monolith of the materialist paradigm.
I think that you're right. We are chipping away. We're beginning to change worldview. And it's not only your colleagues in the medical profession and the science world that's important, but perhaps even more important is when people start sharing their personal experiences with others. You know, people tend to have them, and they have that thought that it's not normal, that they're going to be labeled. And sometimes they won't even share it within their own families. We've encountered that. They won't tell their spouse. They won't tell their children.
And that is, you know, the work you people are doing is so invaluable in this respect. It's everybody's experience that once you establish this as a subject that can be talked about, people talk, everybody else has a story. Oh yes, in fact, when my dad died, this and this happened, and I had this experience. And as you say, I was not ready to share it because I didn't want to be taken as a loony. And so please do continue this very important mission you have. And I think you're doing a lot of good to a lot of people.
As are you, and tell our listeners again, I mean, we've been talking with Dr. Piero Calvi-Parisetti. His website is drparisetti.com, drparisetti.com. You could Google him if you forget that. He does have, I'll tell you flat out, it's a very unusual and I think a very effective online course that's designed for general audiences. It's not highly technical. It's a step-by-step process. Whether you have a fear of death or you are grieving the loss of a loved one, you don't have to take the pathway, which I also did, of reading hundreds and hundreds of books. Dr. Parisetti has encapsulated not only the scientific evidence, but presents it in a very logical fashion and delves into some philosophical concepts as well. So that course people can find on your website, right?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. And the book, there is a link to the book on our website, on an Amazon link to 21 Days into the Afterlife.
And there's a link to Dr. Parisetti's site from our website, too. So it doesn't matter where anybody is right now, they can find him.
Right. And we appreciate it. You certainly are doing more than most in this field, and we appreciate your efforts, and you're doing great work. And we certainly want to keep in touch, and perhaps you'll consider writing an article for our newsletter. So we'd like that as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Fran and Bob, this has been so great talking to you, and really it's a meeting of like-minded people, and it's heartwarming, and thank you again for the wonderful job you're doing.
Well, thank you. And next time I'm in Scotland, remind me to buy you a nice single malt.
Absolutely. Actually, you, from a Scotsman, that's almost, you know, heresy. But the whiskey I really like is Irish. It's called Redbreast, and it's an Irish whiskey. It's to die for.
I'll put that on the list. All right. Have a good. I'll say to you, have a good morning and the rest of the day. And
have a good evening yourselves.
Okay. Take care. Thanks for joining.
Cheerio
us.
Then. Bye bye. Thanks Bye-bye. A lot.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Francis Mistracco, Tim Donahue, Deb Martin, Tina Jocelyn, Barbara Russell, Vicki Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Farron, Eileen Lafata, Rita Springer, David Hayes, Barbara Petillo, Glenna Irwin, Julie B., Stanley Mullen, John Borland, Flora Prisco, Ann Hutchinson, Marianne Pierzga, Tanya Cash, Andy O'Brien, Jeanette Davies, Janice Borelli, Joel Auerbach, Lenny Ficarelli, Rachel S., Lynn Cheney, Kimberly Saavedra, Johnny Jackson, Henry Stark, John Kahali, Phyllis Alexander, and Betty Alexander. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.